This is the Made for More podcast. The health and wellness industry can be dogmatic and stagnant. We aim to explore what makes up the true essence of the human experience by discussing health, happiness, the human body, and what it truly means to be made for more. I'm your host, Jake Reynolds, along with co-host Lauren Sock and Mary Kathleen Toner. Today's episode of Made for More is sponsored by Functionize Health and Physical Therapy. Functionize Health and Physical Therapy provides modern wellness for the everyday athlete. Functionize is a private pay physical therapy and wellness center serving active adults and athletes across the greater Atlanta area. Built on the foundation of understanding human experience, offering practical solutions, and insisting on an individualized approach, Functionize empowers you to take control of your health and wellness today, so you may thrive and enjoy your best years ahead. You can find Functionize Health online at www.functionizehealth.com or call at 404-907-4196. Now, Made for More. Welcome everybody to the Made for More podcast. I'm Jake Reynolds.
I'm Mary Kathleen.
And I'm Lauren Sock. Today we are speaking with my good friend, Dr. Carrie Pagliano. She is a pelvic health physical therapist for the past 21 years and owner of Carrie Pagliano Physical Therapy in Arlington, Virginia. Welcome to the podcast, Carrie.
Thanks.
Well, we are excited for you to be here in lots of different ways. But before we dive into your story, I think we need to share how we know each other, because it is a long story.
That is a long story. We'll make it short, though.
Sure, exactly. So Carrie and I went to physical therapy school together. She was 1 year ahead of me. So we're talking 1999, 2000 era, which probably seems a long time ago.
Before that, actually, I think it's like 97.
Well, yeah. So Carrie and I were actually in the same dorm. I guess we have to tell them that.
Yes.
Lots of stories of traveling and going out around Philadelphia. So we went to school at the University of the Sciences in Philadelphia, which was not the name of the school when we went there. It was actually Philadelphia College of Pharmacy and Science. That was it, right? PCPS. Yes. But Carrie was one of my best friends. And, you know, I have this, like, I always tell this story because I don't think that I would have gotten through physical therapy school without Carrie's help. She's like the smarty pants that did so well. But she helped me get along and make it through. And we spent...
That's fine.
It's so true. But, I guess... We just have a long history, and it's been so great to see you in your career. You know, I've known you as, my friend, and to see you grow in your career and really find your voice in the world of pelvic health. And so I think it would be really great kind of for you to tell us your story, like your 3-minute story of how you got to where you are, and we'll go from there.
Well, when we met, there was no way on any planet that I would have ever thought I would have become a pelvic health physical therapist, much less president of an association surrounding pelvic health, which I was. And so the fact that kind of all that stuff even came to fruition, I wouldn't have predicted, 20, 25 years ago.
Right.
And so my background, primarily I went into orthopedics. There weren't a lot of jobs when I got out of school, and just fell into orthopedics a bit, fell a little bit into pelvic health, just to move down to this area in DC where I'm at. And then I was kind of doing them separately. And then one day just realized that my pelvic health patients were orthopedic patients. It was just muscles in a different place. It was orthopedics in a warm, dark place. And so for me, when I started to treat I guess the buzzword is holistically. I didn't really think about it that way. When I started to treat that way, lo and behold, my patients got better. I wasn't just treating one spot. I was, treating that entire patient. And then, fast forward a couple of kids. And my joke is that I pretty much went through everything, pregnancy, postpartum, so I could relate to my patients, which funny haha, but it really isn't.
Right. No, that's huge to be able to
have that whole education of having a couple kids and, you know, having prolapse and leakage and diastasis and then kind of trying to grapple with how to work your way through that. If this is my job and it's confusing and I know the literature, which isn't awesome, by the way, and I'm having trouble, like, what do people do that don't know how to navigate the system and don't know how to navigate all of this? And so I think for me, that was really a big turning point. And I mean, I've practiced in a lot of different settings. And, when you started your practice, Lauren, I always thought, oh, gosh, and I'm so risk averse anyway, like, I could never do that. And then you started yours. And I'm like, oh, well, shoot, if she can do it, like, you made it look very easy. And now we both,
it's not as easy, right?
Exactly. Your kids are older than mine. You got married before me. Like, I just let you run all that stuff first. I call that payback for all the help I gave you in school.
You let me test it out, and then you're like, all right, let's
exactly.
see.
Yeah. Yeah, I figure we're even now, but so I opened my practice. It'll be, oh my gosh, 3 years ago this coming winter. It'll
be 3 years. That's great.
And my practice, it's just me. I like it that way. I've started to branch out and do more kind of telehealth and virtual options and things like that, which was part of the plan before COVID anyway. And then COVID just sort of kicked that in the pants and really made it more of a priority. And that's pretty much what I live, eat, and breathe, in clinic, on social media, kind of that's my jam. And so, there's no way when, we were in, what was it, Wilson? Was that our dorm? I never would have figured.
I think so. Yeah. Wilson Hall.
And I'm knocking on your door at 8 o'clock in the morning because I'm hungry on a Saturday and there's the brunch doesn't start till 10. Like, yeah. I wouldn't have thought, hey, fast forward a bunch of years and this is what your work is. But no, it's been a blessing in disguise for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've seen you when you treated orthopedics and then when you progressed into public health. And I remember even thinking, like, that is not something I want to touch. Like, that is,
literally.
Sports. Yeah, literally. Right. And I mean, just through your kind of mentorship kind of persuaded me to seek out taking public health classes. And I use those, my knowledge from those courses in my practice too. And I treat some, pelvic health cases, but if I didn't have that knowledge, like, I wouldn't be able to treat on the bigger scale and a holistic manner, right?
It becomes this black hole for orthopedic PTs and orthopedic PTs don't necessarily, they get scared about treating pregnant women. And I'm like, they're pregnant. They're not dead. it's like they have a disease or something and they think, oh my gosh, if I touch them in this one place, it's going to put them spontaneously into labor. Trust me, I had two kids that they had to pry out of my body. Like, it's not going to happen if it wasn't meant to happen. So that's where I think, I love being kind of Switzerland where you can speak, I can speak pelvic language. I can speak ortho language. I can speak strength and conditioning language, runners, CrossFit. Like, when you can speak all those languages, you can figure out how to mash it up and make it work. And that, I think, is really where our profession, like, that's where the good clinicians are, that they can problem solve and think. Because again, the research isn't awesome. And so many pelvic health clinicians just get so caught up in the hole, quite literally, and don't consider other parts of the body, or they lay down rules that, like, oh, you shouldn't be running, or don't do this, or don't do that. But, as a mom, I'm like, I'm not listening to you. I'm sorry. If me running means that I don't kill my children, then I'm going to go run. Like, so I don't know. I it's like a mashup between all the things and then throw in, like, surviving motherhood for, however long at this point. Yeah. And we're all still here, even with virtual school.
I love that you are taking all the different perspectives and mashing them together, as you say. And I love that you admit that the research is really confusing for yourself, because as someone who, I found Functionize and work here now because I was seeking out pelvic health, And I sort of just fell into finding it. Like no OBGYN told me about it or anything. It was actually a sex therapist who told me, you need to go get physical therapy. And I was like, well, for what? And she was like, for your pelvic floor. And I was like, what's a pelvic floor? And I was, I was 27 or 28 years old and I had never heard of this. And so before we dive into prenatal and postpartum, can you tell me some of the other reasons people might need to go see a pelvic health PT so we can share that with our listeners?
Sure. Well, I think really pregnancy postpartum is when it's socially acceptable to start talking about it, to be honest. And maybe, you know, the little old lady with her Depends or something like that. That's when it's okay to talk about it. Anything else beforehand, it's all like hush hush on the DL. And that's kind of what you went through, Mary Kathleen, like pelvic pain, pain with tampon insertion or trying to have speculum insertion to get a pap smear. With guys, oh my God, one of the very few professions where you're advocating for males in health, for crying out loud, because men were having to go to gynecologists to get testicular pain diagnosed because they just were diagnosed with prostatitis, meaning an inflamed prostate, which probably was because of something like overactive pelvic floor or a back problem or you know, can you imagine how embarrassing it is to go to a gynecologist for penis pain? Like, to even bring that up. And so, you know, and it's super, super common. And even with kids, I work a little bit with kids. It's not my primary focus, but I had issues with my oldest with bedwetting. And, you know, the pediatrician is like, oh, it's totally fine. No big deal. But I knew, like, you get kids that are older and they're wetting the bed or they're having leakage or at school or soiling, like their risk for mental health issues increases, their risk for suicide increases, like these things that if you don't know this, you listen to your general practitioners and you're like, oh, okay, it's totally fine. And then you turn around one day and the kid's like in their teenage years and they can't go have a sleepover at their friend's house because they wear a diaper at night. Like, that's not okay.
No.
So, you know, those are all the things that, you know, that we can cover as a pelvic health PT. And that's just completely aside from anything related to pregnancy or postpartum. And a lot of people just don't realize that.
Well, and I, you know, the talking about kids too, you know, just the prevalence that if you have constipation as a kid, you're more likely to have urinary incontinence as an adult too. And I don't think people even talk to their kids about, you know, peeing and pooping, right? Like just to say, like, what does your stool look like? How often do you go to the bathroom? Does it hurt when you go to the bathroom?
You know, when all you learn about that area is what you get in fifth grade health class, which is not awesome either. You know, being able to use the correct words for your anatomy so that if something happens, you can describe it to somebody. There's a huge correlation between low back pain and incontinence, especially with, there's a pretty high stress incontinence rate with a lot of our younger high level athletes, especially gymnasts, runners. And again, it's overactivity in the pelvic floor. And these girls are not, they're taught that this is just part of their sport. And then it comes up later on. And so when I'm treating them postpartum, you know, one of the first questions I ask is, well, what sports did you do growing up? Did you have issues? And then these little things come out like, yeah, you know, I went to the bathroom all the time, or, you know, my mom told me that I shouldn't sit on the toilet seat, so I hovered a lot, or I was afraid of public restrooms, or I had chronic constipation since I was three. All sorts of things like that. Like, people don't realize that those things can come back later on. But again, the first time it's socially acceptable to talk about it is after you have kids. But, you know, if you've got these things that have happened before you even got pregnant, you know, you just assume that, oh, it's the kid that caused it. Nope. That's just made it possible for you to go and seek help, and somebody actually, you know, would pay attention and listen to you, unfortunately.
Yeah. What, and we mentioned incontinence, what are the types of incontinence, just if people don't know what that is?
The basic ones, they're stress incontinence. So that's running, jumping, coughing, laughing, lifting, basically any activity. And then urge incontinence, you have a strong urge and you can't control it. And that's the one people are most familiar with. It's like the gotta go commercial. And that's really like everybody's really familiar with the products you use and everybody's really familiar with all the drugs for light bladder leakage, because apparently that's what we call it. But again, like that's where the money is. The money's and some of these companies are doing a good job advocating with physical therapy and working in conjunction. And I have no problem with that. Like the more attention we can place on these issues, the better, but one in place of the other, I don't necessarily believe that that's the right path.
So I was just going to say, going back towards like talking about kids and stuff like that. If someone just has a baby, maybe they've never been to a pelvic health PT before, when would be the best time for them to see a pelvic PT? Like after childbirth?
Yeah. So, I mean, back probably even like 2 or 3 years ago, we really were holding the line on, you know, wait till the 6-week checkup with your OBGYN. And I think it was 1.5, maybe 2 years ago, ACOG, which is the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, came out and really started talking more about that fourth trimester. And really we're saying instead of waiting till 6 weeks, we need to be touching base with our moms within 2 to 3 weeks after delivery.
Wow.
Typically that happens with C-section moms because you're getting the scar checked and it's, you know, post-surgical, but not so much with moms with vaginal deliveries. And so a lot of us in the PT space really kind of took ownership of that and said, all right, well, if you guys are doing that, then, you know, that makes sense for us too.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say it happens 100% across the board, but our exam at 2 and 3 weeks postpartum, I'm not doing an internal muscle assessment, but there's plenty I can do externally. You know, first time moms, you're kind of talking them off the cliff at that point. There's so much they don't know. There's so many questions that they have.
Yeah.
And I was that mom that laminated my birth plan, which I wouldn't recommend. And Lauren, you know, understands this, knowing me as long as she has and knowing my notes too.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I like to have some amount of control, and that's like parenting 101 is like, you don't have any. So, I think, you know, with usually I'm seeing moms 2 to 3 weeks postpartum. We're doing an external muscle assessment. We're looking at the pelvic floor via real-time ultrasound. Retraining abdominals. If they had a C-section, we're making sure that there's basic scar care and giving instructions on lifting, carrying, nursing positions, all sorts of things, because you use your abdominals when you're moving. There's no way that you're not. And just giving moms some expectations, because when Instagram is telling you you should be running a marathon at 6 weeks postpartum and you came out of the hospital and had to send your mother-in-law to Target to go buy you new underwear because you were so swollen that you couldn't fit into your old ones. That kind of, that was me, by the way. that wasn't part of the plan. And so, you know, not everybody, you know, when you walk out, you get exactly what you thought was going to happen. And so, when you do your 6 week postpartum check, it's usually, okay, are all the parts where they're supposed to be? If I did some sort of stitching, is the stitching intact? And are you on birth control? Which, again, like, who's thinking of birth control at that point?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not thinking of sex, like, a couple weeks postpartum. So it's a really, really different check. And, of course, they're in and out super fast. Half the time you have the baby with you anyway, and you're hoping, oh my gosh, what if the doctor comes in and I have to nurse? And like, you're trying to figure out all that stuff anyway.
Yeah.
So having a little bit more time that you can actually talk some of this stuff out and get your expectations kind of clarified a little bit and get your questions answered. And that's the beauty of what we do anyway, is being able to have that time to connect with people and answer what they really want to have answered. So the really, really short answer to your question, Mary Kathleen, is there's so much we can evaluate at 2 to 3 weeks postpartum.
Yeah.
That's the earliest some people want to wait. But again, it's so much more than, hey, can you Kegel? And that's kind of what people, you know, water down and think that that's what everything is that we do. And that's just this tiny, tiny little speck.
I think that's a good segue into, you know, you had mentioned, you know, actually getting your questions answered. And, you know, this is a obviously area that is only recently getting a lot of attention. Like you said, poorly understood, rarely focused on, with the potential for a lot of misinformation out there.
Yeah.
And you spend a good amount of time on your social media platforms highlighting myths or bringing topics to the forefront that are things that are not necessarily discussed. What's the story behind that? And how have you kind of seen that myth busting or those highlighting of topics that should be discussed help your clients and really help change the landscape of pelvic floor PT?
Sure. Honestly, where that came from, like when I decided to hop a little bit more on social media, I was like, all right, well, what's an easy thing to do, quite honestly? I was like, oh, we'll bust some myths on Monday because Monday Mythbuster. And then Thursday, we'll do Thursday Truth. They're kind of the same thing. You just flip flop it, to be honest with you. But the biggest, when every single patient comes in, there's always a point where like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know this existed. Or, oh my gosh, I never knew that. Or they come in and they've, you know, dove down the Google rabbit hole, which is never a good idea, and come up with some, and there's something new every day. Like that's the beauty of Mythbuster Monday is like, it's never ending. There's always something new.
Always there, a new question, right? Somebody
yeah,
asks you.
Something new, something ridiculous. I'm like, really? That's it? Okay. And so just, but some of the stuff, I think why it resonated with me the most. And actually, Lauren, you were with me when we did Anthony Lowe's course. We were together right. in Chicago.
And, yeah, was that 3 or 4 years ago, I think?
Four.
Okay.
So I was starting to work with a lot of lifters and CrossFitters, and that was like back in the day when I think there was a little bit more contentious relationship about what PTs thought about CrossFit. And it's, I feel like it's a lot different now. So this is probably like, you know, 2013 was when there was like a video that said, hey, it's totally okay to leak when you double under a jump rope. And this woman refers to her, she's like, oh, well, my OBGYN is right here, who was basically CrossFitting with her. And she's like, yeah, it's totally fine. And basically it became this badge of honor. Mm-hmm. So for PTs, of course, because we like to hate things. We're like, not that.
Right.
It's bad. And so Lauren and I went to take this course with a physio from Australia that basically was looking at how to work with these women that do this. I was like, all right, well, I can hate it, but I should at least know how to work with it.
Yeah.
And it kind of blew my mind a little bit. And I really went in, I think, way more closed-minded than I thought. About a lot of those things, but then also realized myself how I had been holding myself back because with abdominal separation, I volunteered to be the demo, and Anthony's become a good friend of mine, and literally he's a gigantic. He looks like a sumo wrestler with an Aussie accent. It's really funny, but he made me cry. He's like, "You're not broken. You're just weak." And I'm like, I didn't think I was broken. I don't know what you're talking about. And I walk out there and like, crap, because I'm guessing I'm not supposed to swear on this. Crap, he's totally right. And, you know, I've been a runner, you know, a really long time, like most of my life. Had some hip issues, have really struggled kind of through that postpartum and wasn't finding the answers I was looking for. And, you know, I had thought all these things, like you shouldn't do sit-ups, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. This is my job. And I thought all these things and I constantly taking things away from people. And I didn't like that when people took stuff away from me. So why was I doing that to somebody else?
Yeah.
And where did I have the knowledge and the research behind it? There wasn't any.
Yeah.
So rather than taking things away from people, why don't we just kind of play? Why don't we try things and just, you know, we don't have all the answers, but what if we just try? And that really besides walking out of there and being like, oh crap, now I have to go to CrossFit, which I did. It took me a couple months to do it. I was so scared. Like that really, I think, is why the Mythbuster and the truth resonated with me. And what I've really tried to share on my social media is like, I don't have all the answers and I don't have any problem saying that. Because, and if I don't have the answers, but I'm willing to try and I'm willing to go beyond, you know, no, you can't do that anymore. You stink. Go find something else. Like there's nothing worse than somebody saying to a runner, oh, why don't you just swim? No, no offense, Jake, like swimming's great. I swam growing up, but like, it's not the same thing. And even like, you know, SoulCycle or, you know, with the Peloton, like it's not the same thing as running. I'm sorry. It's just not.
Right. And if you're a runner,
you don't want to run. And if you want to CrossFit, you want to CrossFit. Like you probably hate running if you like CrossFitting. I'm just this weird person in the middle. But it's, again, like if you have somebody willing to try, you know, that's what a profession is. That's what a doctoring profession is, when you use your brain, not when you act like a technician and say, well, you didn't fall into the guidelines that I have, and I'm not willing to do what's off the paper. I'm not willing to try and figure this out. And so that's really, I think, where a lot of this came from, is my own experience, seeing the frustration, being that person that took stuff away from people for a while and not liking how that felt. And now being able to give people a chance. And that's what I focus on, as I work with women that they might have seen other therapists, and that's fine. But we can still do more. Mm-hmm. And it's great to be able to give somebody, you know, something back that was so much a part of their identity, or they come in and say, I don't know if I'm going to be able to have another kid because I can't function with these symptoms. And then you get a direct message, hey, I'm pregnant again. I can't believe I actually considered doing this, but I can't without you.
Like, it's huge, yeah.
Oh yeah. It's magic.
Yeah. Well, and Carrie, if you remember when we took that course, you know, the end of that course, we went to a CrossFit gym and they asked us to do deadlifts. And
yes, I was such a wuss. Oh my God.
What we both were. We were like, why would we do this? We're going to hurt ourselves. Right. And then, you know, when you had the right people there guiding you, cueing you on what should be active and how you adjust things, it was like, oh, this isn't that hard. And, you know, I mean, Jake and I are... Yeah, it was what you posted a picture, right?
So judgy. I was like, strength and conditioning. And meanwhile, you know, the guy that we work with, Richard Fly, like he was he's the best communicator, coach, whatever I've ever worked with in my life. He pegged me in the first 10 seconds where she thinks she knows what she's talking about. She's scared as hell, but I'm going to show her what she can do. I was like, oh crap, I got to do this now.
That's awesome.
Well, and Jake and I are taking a course, an online course right now for the fitness athlete, where we are going through, you know, deadlifts and front squats, back squats, overhead squats. And it is very humbling, first of all, to see how it is, but it's like so empowering when you get it and you're like, I can lift heavy things. I can do hard things. I just needed somebody to give me help me through that and walk me through what it's all about.
Totally. And I think it's really interesting now. I feel like the tide has turned. We were kind of just at the very beginning of it. The tide has turned, absolutely. And the cool kids in ortho now are, you know, strength and conditioning. Like why that wasn't emphasized in PT school, I don't know, because there's so much to be said to how to dose exercise and be able to play with frequency and duration and type and what's your purpose in doing things. And we really just have lost and gotten away from that. So, but I feel like the tide's turning on it for sure.
One thing, and this was a discussion we had in our fitness athlete course, and actually a discussion Lauren and I were having, is, and going back to something you had just talked about, which is oftentimes the easy way out as a practitioner to get somebody feeling better is just tell them to stop, right?
I know.
And that is a really hollow approach to medicine, because all you're doing is you're stripping somebody of their self-efficacy and you're actually limiting their potential from getting better. So it's a short-term gain for, but the long-term ramifications are really dangerous. And, you know, a great example was I had a guy who I had worked with who had had some back pain, radiculopathy, and he had really committed to working with me and got really, you know, completely better in about 8 weeks. And then has since started doing some strength and conditioning work for a class that I teach. And he showed up the other morning. He said, "Hey, my spine doctor told me I shouldn't deadlift."
Oh,
and I said, "Why?"
Right.
And he kind of looked at me puzzled and he said, "You know, I don't know. I didn't ask him why." And I said, "Okay, yeah. Here's maybe the solution. Instead of taking that thing away, let's learn why you don't feel confident with that, why you don't feel comfortable with that. And let's learn to make you successful with that thing." And that's a much more difficult thing to do as a practitioner, to be a little bit confrontational, to have enough confidence in yourself and your knowledge and your abilities to go against what a lot of other health practitioners are saying.
Yeah.
And when I started realizing, oh, they're saying that because they don't have the time or they don't have the energy or the, you know, the confidence to be able to say, no, let's actually work through this. Well, and so I think you're exactly right. Yeah. I think as healthcare practitioners, we need to be better advocates to say, you know what, I actually know what I'm talking about. And, you know, who do you want to be in a year? Who do you want to be in 5 years? Who do you want to be in 20 years? Mm-hmm. And so I think these conversations are really healthy. And I think that, like you said, we have to be the ones changing and making those steps forward.
Totally. And I think also too, I mean, I've been doing, hopefully, a much better job asking patients to unpack where ideas are coming from, because I need to understand that. It's trying to basically sell health and be like, why is it that you're sitting here with me and we're doing deadlifts and you're doing amazing and you feel good, yet you just talk to a physician who probably has never deadlifted, who doesn't understand anything about it, and has preconceived notions that aren't based in research. Mm-hmm. And yet you listen to him, whereas literally last week you just deadlifted this amount and you just told me you felt great. Like we need to unpack that a little bit too.
Yeah.
Because it can't be just you trusting me. It can't be Carrie said this, and that's why I'm going to do it. Because, I mean, unfortunately, you know, PTs were a doctoring profession, but stereotypically, like, people are going to put the advice of a physician ahead of a PT. So I need to understand where that thought process comes from, because at the end of the day, it needs to be the patient's choice. They need to understand and choose for themselves what to do, but also realize how doing something like lifting heavy is so empowering that you can do things that you never thought you could do. Oh, and by the way, you don't have back pain anymore, because there's this stereotype or misconception that if your back hurts, you should rest and it'll go away on its own, which you guys all know could not be further from the truth.
Yeah.
But yeah, we need to do some of these things. So I really started asking patients more, not assuming why they're doing it, but it helped me understand why that makes any sense whatsoever. And then, you know, we talk through it and they're like, oh yeah, you're totally right. Because me just saying your doctors doesn't understand and they don't know. And like that can't be enough. They have to feel it. They have to be like, no, I am going to choose what I know feels right in my body.
And one of the things that when those kind of conversations come up, you know, I think PTs have forever kind of felt bad or been nervous about going against what a physician says. And I think recently when people say things like that, you know, I'll just respond with, you know, no offense to your physician, but most, like you said, most of these people don't deadlift, or, you know, let's talk about what their education is behind exercise. They receive maybe one or two semesters, unless they're an orthopedist or a sports medicine doctor, they don't receive a lot of education on this stuff. Yeah. And so in a tactful way saying, you know, not to, you know, put your physician down, but I believe they're wrong about this. And I believe here's the reasons why. And, one of the guys that we were talking, Laura and I were talking to recently said, you know, knowing that literature actually gives you a solid foundation to stand on to be able to say, let's point to these things that actually show the opposite.
Yeah. I think it's also understanding wheelhouses and lanes. I very distinctly remember I used to work with patients from this one orthopedic practice that this physician had militant directions for post-op, and it basically like you need to do A, B, and C. And so I very much remember working with a shoulder patient and they weren't getting better. And I remember, you know, all these things I was supposed to do written on the script. And I remember they were going back to the physician and thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to get in such big trouble. This physician knows exactly how to rehab this patient and he's going to know that I'm a total fraud. I distinctly remember thinking that. And I'm not sure whether it's age or I'm old and senile now or what the deal is, but like, and I think it, honestly, it was shifting into pelvic health because there's nobody knows what the hell's going on in pelvic health. It's way better than it was 20 years ago. We're not telling people, hey, have a glass of wine and then you can have sex and it's all in your head, like that sort of thing. Or yeah, you're going to have to give up running because your uterus is falling out. Like we're better than that now, which is good. But I mean, the sheer understanding of all the reasons as to why things occur, like so much of it is complex. And we're in such a lovely position to work in a multidisciplinary way that I think it's easier for us to figure that kind of stuff out. And so now if I have somebody that, you know, they send a whole big description, generally I'm like, okay, that gives me a general idea. Are you pain or leakage? Or like, it gives me a ballpark about what we're talking about, it, you know, physicians wise. And it's our lanes, it's our education. Like a physician can give a referral out to another practitioner. They can order imaging. They can give prescriptions. They could do a procedure. That's what the options are. Whereas we've got the lock on exercise. That's our jam. And, you know, and I feel bad because lots of times a lot of PTs give it away. I was having a conversation recently online where a practitioner was saying, you're only a pelvic health physical therapist if you do internal. And I'm like, I'm sorry, my index finger doesn't make me special and where I put it, like it just doesn't. And I think it's people looking for ownership and identity and what they do and that sort of thing. But I'm like, that just merely confirms my critical thinking and problem solving that in the first place. Like, but again, like what my finger doesn't make me special. And so it comes down to being able to pull all that information together, to integrate it, to have a hypothesis, to have a way to combine the nervous system, the musculoskeletal system, digestive, urinary, like, all of this stuff. That's the beauty of our lane, that we get to do the mashup. And it's hard to expect, you shouldn't expect your physician to give you musculoskeletal advice from an exercise perspective. That's not fair to ask them to do that, just like you wouldn't ask me to deliver your baby. Like, don't. Like, so in emergency, so okay, true. We'll talk about it, but like, you wouldn't expect this from me. Why are we expecting that from our physicians? And so I think when you talk about it that way, it doesn't become a pissing contest. Mm-hmm. It becomes, this is my expertise, this is your expertise. If we combine it well enough and leverage each other, everybody wins on this.
Absolutely.
But when we expect things from other people and they don't deliver, like, was it because they're bad at what they do, or is it because we didn't really have, you know, we didn't have the right expectations for them? That's a whole nother
So going back, you know, we're talking about, you know, kind of empowering women and giving them the path to be stronger and more resilient. But, you know, we also have the reverse of that, right? The people who push and go back too soon.
Right.
Absolutely. And that's almost like the badge of honor that I bounce back 6 weeks after my pregnancy. So if you see those women who are now coming in with urinary incontinence, prolapse, a DR, or the abdominal separation, like, how do you approach that with them, that they actually might need to take a step back and get stronger, more stable before they jump in so quickly?
Yeah. I mean, that one I think is probably the hardest because, again, you have to dive in and understand where that drive comes from. I see that a ton with people primarily that need exercise for another reason. whether it be mental health, whether it be weight loss, whether it be, you know, just there's another reason behind that. And I think if you don't acknowledge that other reason, and don't unpack that and make sure that it's being addressed, it makes it quite challenging. And so for me, like, it's making sure that I'm understanding the entire issue. And we negotiate. I'm like, all right, well, you want to do this. This is what I'm seeing. Where can we meet in the middle? Where can we find a place where you do this, but maybe we negotiate on this other piece. And it's really been interesting. I was just having a conversation yesterday. There's a lot more elite distance runners that are returning postpartum. There are a lot of elite CrossFitters that are returning. One recently, and I've been so over the moon that she's actually acknowledged and DM'd me, which I'm like, oh my, I'm totally fangirling. Annie Thorisdottir, who was fittest woman in the world, I think 2 or 3 years. She wow. just had a baby, and she came out probably a couple weeks ago. And she's like, I've been really open with people about, I had these expectations about how things were supposed to go, and it's not going that way. I was just incredibly, like, how amazing is it to be grappling in public? And yeah, it's her choice, but grappling in public with, you know, processing being postpartum for the first time, you've had control of your body for so many years. It's performed at the highest level in the world, and it's not responding in a way in which you expected. You're processing that and sharing it with the entire world all at the same time. I'm like, it's kind of like Chrissy Teigen just having gone through her miscarriage.
Oh, that, like, was awful.
What a saint to have, you know, and what a gift to moms who have gone through that.
Yeah.
That you're not alone.
Yeah.
And so I think it's more and more postpartum athletes are stepping up and being real.
Yeah.
And that makes my job so much easier. And it's so hard to be in the gym. And I've had this conversation with patients where, like, they make the decision to hold themselves back a little bit, but yet they see somebody else. Mm-hmm. And somebody else is like, well, why are they doing it and I can't do it?
Yeah.
And so we try and unpack that, and we try and figure that out, because it's really hard when you are an athlete and you control so much, and then all of a sudden you feel like you have so little control.
So I know from personal experience that stress can play a huge role in symptoms related to pelvic health. Yeah. And I'm wondering if right now during COVID, if you've seen, are you seeing more people now? Or are there more people seeking your help, whether it's appointments or on Instagram?
Yeah, it's funny. I was just chatting with a gynecologist that I work with locally. She was saying, she called it a pelvic floor epidemic. And it's come in waves, and it's got different facets. So kind of what you're referring to, Mary Kathleen, like, it's beyond just, hey, I'm stressed out and my pelvic floor is stressed out too, which kind of sometimes shows up in, like, sitcoms and, you know, comedies and things like that. It's a measure of sympathetic nervous system, fight or flight. It can be related to pressure and tension. If you've got a lot of tension up in your neck and jaw, and, you know, you got a crappy workstation and all that stuff, it can actually affect pressure downward and cause the pelvic floor to, you know, be more overactive too. Like, every single kind of client that I see has been affected in the past 7 months, whether it be incontinence, pelvic organ prolapse, anything pelvic pain related, every single one, because, again, 7 months in, we're all in varying levels of fight or flight, but we just don't notice it anymore because we're all in it.
Yeah.
And so actually the last probably month or so, it's been a little bit different. And some different reasons, I think, for it. One, those of us that have had to deal with the going back to school, that's just another animal that I won't go down so I can control my blood pressure. Another one is realizing that this is long-term and this is not, you know,
potentially it's not going away.
No, it's not. And yeah, and it's like initially you just, okay, this is how we figured out how to do it. And then you realize, okay, if this is going to be sustainable and we're all more tired and all just like, there's a lot more stuff that's with it. Like the stress is a very different stress. And then political stress, you know, socio-emotional, like, you know, what's going on in neighborhoods and families. And like, there's not a single part of our lives right now that doesn't have some sort of physiological implication in how we hold our emotions and our stress and that sort of thing. And so patients that I haven't seen in years were popping up a lot in the very beginning of shutdown. That part has slowed down, but a lot of people where they're just like, okay, I'm not progressing as quickly. And I'm like, you know, in a normal world, this is what the pace would be. And in the context of all this, actually you progressing is pretty amazing. So just readjusting expectations again. But yeah, I've definitely been much busier, which isn't awful. It's been good from a business perspective, but really, really difficult to see. And again, moms too. I mean, Lauren and I were talking about this the other day, the challenge that this pandemic has put on working women. It's bad enough anyway, trying to have a new baby and go back to work. Now you're expected to work from home with a baby, but also do everything you're supposed to do. And nobody wants to see your baby or hear your baby on Zoom. And it's set back, I think, working moms, what I've heard, like at least 10 years. So no, there's no stress in that at all.
Wow. Well, I mean, Carrie, this conversation, I mean, there's so much that we can dive into. But I hope that it's given women enough education and men as well, that they can change, you know, where they envision themselves. Right. And totally. Even if it's not seeing a pelvic health therapist, you know, that's not, it's just seeing a physical therapist in general to help you. So you're not holding yourself back, that your body is very capable of doing lots of hard things. And if somebody tells you no, like go seek somebody else, get an opinion from someone else, but don't take no for an answer, because there's lots of other resources. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, by talking about moms, I mean, you truly have been, an inspiration to me watching Aww. You change the conversation of pelvic health and having somebody in our court to just, yeah, start the conversation, make people feel they're not alone. It's been huge watching you on social media and seeing all the cool things you're doing.
Thanks,
so it's just, yeah, definitely been an honor to have you on. As one of my dear friends, but tell everybody, where can they find you? How can they learn more about what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's super easy. I tend to hang out more on Instagram. Pictures make me happy. So, my handle is, just Carrie Pagliano. My website is carriepagliano.com. Facebook, I think it's just Carrie Pagliano Physical Therapy. And, I have a Return to Run postpartum course in the works. Hopefully it's going to drop sometime late fall, but if that's your jam, definitely come check it out. We're putting a lot more stuff out just to keep that conversation going. Cause right now with COVID, you know, running is one of the easiest things that moms can do to get out and about. We want to make sure to give them that little mental boost that they need and that little health boost as well with returning to run.
Yeah. And the other really cool thing you have on there is that, C-section scar care kit that I recommend to people a lot, because there's nothing out there about, you know, how to take care of your C-section scar after you know, your OB looks at it and says, oh, it's healing, it's fine. But like, I remember I had pain for probably a year after my C-sections, you know, it's still tender if you don't, you know, work on that scar tissue.
Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you, Carrie. We will put this up and hopefully this will be a great resource for people in the future.
Awesome. Thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it.
Welcome back, everybody, to Made for More. We just got finished talking to Carrie Pagliano. You can check her out on Instagram, follow along for good tips and myth busting, good discussion with her and conversations that often don't happen that need to happen. And things that can be really instrumental for change in people's lives that often get ignored or are poorly misunderstood as within healthcare and within society in general. And she's just really good at normalizing these things and actually bringing them to the forefront. So good discussion there. And,
yeah,
you know, as we often do on Made for More, is we love to talk about myths. We love to bust myths. We love to bring the truth to the forefront. And so Mary Kathleen's got some myth busting for us.
Yeah, well, a myth that I probably made up on my own was that postpartum, you shouldn't run for like months. I cannot imagine after 6 weeks. You guys said some people think that they should be running a marathon. Absolutely not. So that was my myth. So I want to know, what is y'all's take on that? Like, what sort of tips do you give to new moms postpartum to return to running or even a different sport they love?
One of the first things, even before, I guess, return to running, is just teaching women how to breathe properly. Yeah. You know, we tend to be chest breathers. And what that means is we use our neck and our chest muscles to do short breaths. So it's kind of that quick inhale, exhale kind of breath. And we never really get to where we are getting to the lower lobes of our lungs and really mm-hmm. inflating them. And so that means using your diaphragm rather than your chest muscles. So a good tip I tell people is to try to inhale through your nose and expand your belly. So if you think of your belly as a balloon, you want that to expand in all directions. So not just in the front, but it needs to expand to the sides, like your ribs should flare a little bit, and into the back, your low back area, to really get a good breath. So you inhale through your nose, expanding your belly, and then you slowly exhale. And you exhale as if you're blowing through a straw. So it's not, it's not short. It's a slow, deep inhale and then blow through that straw and get all the air out of the lungs. And you'll get more efficiency in your breathing and even with return to sport. Because if you get into the chest, it's short, quick, and you might get cramping. A lot of times people get cramping in their abdominals because they're not breathing properly. And so that also controls your pressure systems when you're exercising, having where you're actually, you know, letting the diaphragm move down when you inhale and then move back up when you exhale. And that helps with the pressure systems on your pelvic floor. So maybe you won't leak when you're exercising or laughing and sneezing and coughing. That is a huge tip. And then I have them apply that for return to run. And it helps, just that alone sometimes can really help people.
Yeah, I would say probably two things regarding that. And I am by no means a pelvic floor rehab specialist. But fortunately, I have sort of tools at my discretion and enough knowledge about running to help people adjust accordingly. And so one of the tools that many physical therapists can use, if even regardless of your knowledge of, you know, postpartum return to sport, is that Virginia Commonwealth University came up with a return to running readiness guide that I use for a lot of my runners, but this was specifically tested on the postpartum runner, which is a series of tests that basically say, if you can't pass these, you're not ready for this activity. And if you can pass them, we know that your body is going to be able to withstand at least the initiation of a running program. So, you can access that research online. It's a tool that we've kind of turned into basically a checklist that we give to clients and that we test with them periodically to make sure that they are ready for that. So I have enough knowledge about
it. It's actually on our website too. So people can go under our eBooks and then they can download that for that return to running.
Yep. And I have enough knowledge about running to know how to apply this without having to know everything in the world about pelvic floor rehab. I would say the other thing about running is that running efficiently is all about controlling forces. And so that's one of the things that this tool helps you do is learn how to control force or see how you are managing the forces on your body. The second thing you can do as a physical therapist is actually look at running form. And like we talked with Carrie, it's not a matter of saying, well, just don't do that if you leak or if you have pain or, you know, whatever happens during your run. It's, no, let's look at how you run. Let's look at how you're managing the ground reaction forces to actually make you a little bit more efficient and remove some of the load from your body. So there's ways to get creative without having to know everything in the world about that.
No, all of that plays a role. Yeah. And then in adding that belly breathing into that checklist, Jake, that you were talking about, one of the things is doing step ups to a cadence, right? So ideal running, as you've probably heard in past podcasts, is a cadence of 170 to 180. I'll start people at like a 160 beats per minute doing step ups and then having them integrate the breath pattern. So they might step up, you know, 1-2, an inhale on a 1-2 and an exhale on a 3-4 kind of thing. Yeah. So just getting a rhythm to their breath and then trying to make that inhale and exhale longer. So maybe it's on a 4 count versus a 2 count. But all of that, yeah, is on our website, which is great. People can access that. And I think it's something Carrie also gives to clients for her return to running.
So that's a good tip of the week. Some practice belly breathing.
Right. Yes. Tip of the week is, I would say, practice that belly breathing in through your nose, out through your mouth, just like you're blowing, you're blowing a candle or blowing through a straw, something like that, where your lips are together and it's getting all the air out of your lungs.
Well, we hope this was informative. Again, topic that's not often talked about, but essential for people to know and can be really, really helpful for a large percentage of women and men out there alike. So we appreciate you guys listening. As always, our DMs are open. Feel free to send us questions about this material, and we will see you next time.